On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, I am back, baby. RJ, the big return to the Autumn Windbags after 2 weeks away. And what a great time to do it, too, because the Raiders are now in the thick of the preseason. They're taking on the Jaguars in the Hall of Fame game. And so we talked about the new Raiders depth chart. We talked about Derek Carr and his haters and how they're getting completely pushed to the side. And also, does Ndamukong Suh have a whole new leverage over the Las Vegas Raiders? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. My triumphant return to the Autumn Windbags. My God,
the prodigal son has returned.
I sort of missed you, but I know you missed the shit out of me. 2 weeks. No windbags. I was traveling too much. I was in London. I was in New York. Could not do the show despite my best efforts. I am back, baby, and I promise I will never be gone again. Daddy's home, Soto. Don't you worry.
I missed you with every bullet so far, RJ.
I can tell. I can see it in your eyes. I can tell how bad you wanted it. And perfect timing, too. OTAs are done. Actual practices are underway. The pads are on. As you people are listening to this, it's probably Thursday with the first preseason game of the year. Raiders-Jags, a very football-like substance, Hall of Fame game. Josh McDaniels back home on
home
the
stadium,
field.
Yeah.
His father coached on. A lot to be excited about for a game that's not really worth getting excited about. The NFL is so goddamn good, and we talk about this all the time. They're so good at giving you a football-like substance that makes it feel like you should be excited about football, and then giving you something that's slightly better, slightly better, slightly better. Like, they give you the combine, which is nothing. And then they give you the draft, which is nothing, but a little bit more. And then there's, like, free agency, which is nothing but more. And then OTAs, and then practice with pads, and then preseason. Before you know it, we're playing actual football. So, like, they're so good at just, like, just the tip, just to see how it feels. Mm-hmm. And by the time September rolls around, your balls deep, you didn't even know you were there.
You're getting fisted. No, the NFL is like Disneyland, okay? The rides are like, they're carnival rides. It's basically what they are. They're carnival rides you can get at any freaking carnival, but they just dress them up to make them seem, so nice. I'll spend $150 to walk in here one time. Yeah, that's what it is.
You remember, like, middle school age, if you were a Southern California local, it was $26 to get into Disneyland. You can't get a hot dog and a beer for $26 at Disneyland now.
Dude, I remember with my ASB sticker on my high school ID, I got in on Wednesdays. I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday after 4 p.m. I think it was $20 with my ASB sticker. Go out and pimp some hoes, those single mommies.
Dude, there was no better place in middle school to make a move on the chick you had a crush on.
God, fucking
Disneyland.
Fucking.
You do the Matterhorn, and then had to sit on your lap. You're like, okay. Or we're basically like rounding first base. Like, she's sitting on my lap. Like, we're there.
The best ride ever to Mac down on was at Knott's Berry Farm. It was Kingdom of the Dinosaurs because it was dark as shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting down and it's just moving real nice and slow. There's nothing in between you and homegirl next to you or homeboy, depending on what you like. I'm not going to judge. And man, we just used to cruise around, walk around, be like, hey, you want to go on Kingdom of the Dinosaurs? Girl's like, yeah, let's do it. Jump on, get your Mac on, get your shit tugged. Freaking. All right, see you later. Go find some other chicks.
Wipes her hand off on the Velociraptor on the exit. Yeah, good times.
Hand sanitizer.
It was a simpler time back then. All right, question of the day. Because Rory was so kind to fill in for me. We're like a network here. Like, I know the show's generally me and you, but like, we're building like Rory, me, you. We got some more people coming down the pipe. We're building like a network, so it's not just you and me. So let's get a jump on it. Question of the day. Which windbag do you hate the most? Me, RJ, you, Soto, or Rory? I'm curious.
Dude, people didn't even think Rory was a real person until like 2 weeks ago.
We talked about him constantly, but he hadn't done a show in like a year. And so he's like, he's on the text chain that made this show possible, but he just hasn't really existed. And so we just crossed the 4,000 subscriber threshold on YouTube. And so that's like 3,500 subscribers that are like, who's the hell is this Rory guy you're talking about? You're always making fun of his English accent.
Yeah, I don't even. And the thing is he had the best segment. He had Rory's Grinders.
Yeah. And I had my wife voice it and everything. It was great.
So sexy. Yeah. Tell her I appreciate it.
So which windbag do you hate the most? Me, Soto, or Rory?
Rory.
Very curious. I don't know what we're going to do with this information, but we'll do something with it. 10 lashes, anytime push-ups.
I don't know.
They got to buy the next round.
Endlessly ridicule.
Endlessly. Yeah. That, I mean, that's a no-brainer. But first fun thing I want to get to.
This is hilarious.
Devontae Adams, active Instagrammer, I would say. Very active.
He has a very good Instagram account.
And it's good that there's good Instagrammers on the Raiders, because there's, you know, Max Crosby active, Devontae active. There's a few guys that are pretty active. You get like little glimpses of what's going on behind the scenes, you know. Most of the squad's pretty, you know, keeps their cards close to their vest. Devontae's pretty active. And so it was pretty funny when Devontae posted this today, August
3rd. How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Okay. Head to your drop of a top golf.
You deserve better, Hunter.
So if you know what that is, that's Hunter Renfrow, Devontae Adams, Derek Carr, and Matt Collins.
Hollins.
What did I say?
Mac Collins.
Collins. I was literally just hanging out with my brother Colin. That's why I said Mac Collins.
Oh, that danger.
They're all in an Uber X, a tiny little Uber, on their way to Top Golf. And the caption from Devontae is like, "Hunter is no longer calling the Uber for us."
Dude, okay, I don't know how they had to lube themselves up to get into that car, all three of them, number one.
Four professional athletes. NFL players.
Hunter's in the front seat thinking nothing of it. Hey, man, how's it going? Yeah. How's your day? Like nothing.
In the front seat. Yeah, Hunter's in the front. Shotgun is reserved for the biggest dude. The biggest dude should be in shotgun.
That's Mac Hollins.
Hunter's in the front. You got 6'4" Mac Hollins, Derek Carr, and Devontae. Hollins is riding bitch. And he's the biggest dude. Like his
knees to his chin.
Dude, it's hilarious.
Dude, freaking.
That's Hunter Renfrow. I just buy Uber X. I just get the cheapest one. No big deal.
Look, in Hunter's defense, he just got money. Okay.
Okay.
He just got his. He's not used to having his money yet. Just wait. He'll spend it.
I hope he doesn't. That doesn't sound like the Hunter Renfrow I've fallen in love with. The guy that takes an Uber X despite how much he made. I did the math. This is how much money was in that tiny little Uber X that was going in the 2.7-mile drive from the Raiders practice facility to Top Golf in Las Vegas. Derek Carr just signed a $121 million deal, 3 years. Mm-hmm. Devontae Adams just signed a $141 million deal, 5 years. Hunter Renfrow just signed a $32 million extension, 2 years on top of the last year. That's roughly $300 million crammed into 22 square feet of Uber X. That should be a private jet taken to Top Golf. They could have bought an Escalade, each one of them, drove it the 2 miles to Top Golf, and left the Escalade there, never saw it again. And it wouldn't even have been a blimp on their radar of their bank account. And yet Hunter Renfrow, in true Hunter Renfrow fashion, said, nope, I'm going to save $3.72 by getting an Uber X and shoving the franchise into the back of this tiny Subaru.
Dude, that was like, if you guys don't know, that is such a short trip from the practice facility to the Topgolf. Mm-hmm. It would have, if that, you could have gotten that trip with tip under $15 easy. That's a $12, $10, $12 trip. They could have taken those golf carts from the facility, and that would have been probably a more comfortable ride.
They could have gotten a ride from any of the 37 like PAs or interns that work at the facility and borrowed one of the dozen vehicles the Raiders facility has to take them there. But Hunter Renfro's like, no, I'm going to call an Uber.
At least it barely fit two people. At least like somebody wasn't chilling in the car when they showed up.
I wonder if that's an upgrade for Hunter Renfro. Like he's used to taking the bus. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on, guys. Hold on. Let me fancy this up. I got there. The Uber.
That was like Civic or whatever. Small, dude, that was like a Prius or something. That was small, man.
I like how, if anything, Matt Collins should be the one calling the Uber. Like you're there with three Pro Bowlers. Like Renfro, Pro Bowler, Carr, three-time Pro Bowler, Devontae, however, you know, what, five, six, like however many Pro Bowls. And it's like Matt Collins should be the one being the bitch there, right? I know he's riding bitch. Like he should be like, it should be like, hey.
Hunter is the newest NFL player, though. Matt Collins has been in the league longer.
Pure veteranship. I feel like a Pro Bowl lets you swing your dick around a little bit.
I think you go by seniority, man. I think it's easy. Because
I do love the humility of Hunter Renfro, though. He's like, hey, I'm going to call an Uber X. I'm going to hop in shotgun. I'm not going to laugh at it. We're just going to roll. And you can also tell Devontae Adams is used to the high life because not only, like, obviously he's, you know, a multi-millionaire before he came to the Raiders. But being a multi-millionaire in Green Bay, Wisconsin is different than being multi-millionaire in Las Vegas. So he's like, he's used to just like, a limo picking him up anywhere because it probably costs as much as an Uber in Vegas. And he's like, what am I getting into? Like,
just being famous in Wisconsin, you know, because it's like, who else lives there? Mm-hmm. Just being famous there, like, you don't have to pay for any meals. You don't have to pump your own gas. You can pump a bunch of chicks. Like, if you're famous in LA, it's like, I don't know, or in Vegas, it's like, well, you know, I see famous people all the time.
If you're famous in LA, you're competing with like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
If you're famous in Wisconsin, you're competing with like JJ Watt's second cousin. You know?
Oh god.
Like that's who you're competing with.
Eyeballs.
Anyway, we both thought it was hilarious. I'm glad we could share it with you.
It was really funny.
So let's get to the real football stuff. The Raiders have released their depth chart, which they're required to do by the NFL. Here we are in preseason week number one. And before I show you the depth chart, it's important to know that technically, legally, Josh McDaniels doesn't have to tell you shit. He can make it up. He can have Nate Hobbs lined up at center. He can have Derek Carr as the third string kicker on the depth chart. Like, there's really no rules. Now, they didn't go that crazy, but there's enough for us to gauge some knowledge based on the depth chart plus what we've read from practices, from what we've read from OTAs, from what we know about injuries, all that kind of stuff, but it's not set in stone. So let me give you that like caveat before I show you. So here's the depth chart on offense. They've got basically a pro formation on offense. Two wide receivers, one tight end, a running back and a fullback. A 21 type offense. Wide receivers, Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfro, tight end, Darren Waller, Derek Carr, obviously the quarterback, Josh Jacobs, the running back, and they have the fullback listed, Jakob Johnson. And then the line from left to right, Colton Miller, John Simpson, Andre James, Lester Cotton Sr., Alex Leatherwood. Soto, when you first saw this, what was your immediate reaction?
I was, you know, Leatherwood starting at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that right was that's yeah that's what I said, right? I don't know. Oh, okay, maybe.
Whatever.
I'm hitting the head a lot. That was kind of surprising to me. I mean, given that Brandon Parker started the majority of the games last year and he's still there on the team, mm-hmm. I understand that Josh McDaniels was saying that everyone's going to have a clean slate and everything. All the reports about Lester Cotton kicking ass. He's, you know, it looks like he took over that right guard spot. Mm-hmm. Parham listed at guard.
Yep.
Instead of at center, backup center. He's a backup guard right now. You know, it's, other than that, it's pretty industry standard. You know, Kenyon Drake on and Zamir White on the third team running back is a little bit concerning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Britton Brown is a rookie. He was a seventh round pick, and he's in the kind of the, I guess if they go silver, black, white team, the black team, second string, that's a little bit, you know, concerning.
Bubble player. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, pretty standard.
Yeah. So my, the little pieces of evidence I get, and again, this is not just based purely on this lineup, but also kind of what we've been hearing. Leatherwood at right tackle is interesting, only because we've seen Brandon Parker rotate in at left tackle with Colton Miller. Obviously, he's not replacing Colton Miller, so that tells me he's like a swing tackle. I think that's kind of how they're viewing him, a player that can fill in for either, which kind of leads the way for Leatherwood to be the starter, sort of, kind of, maybe. So I got that part out of it. And also, it also makes me realize, like, I feel like the optimum starting 11 on offense is this that we're seeing, plus, instead of Jakob, Foster Moreau. I think a 12 formation is our best offense. Josh Jacobs at running back and Darren Waller, Foster Moreau at tight end, as opposed to, you know, Jakob gone and then like a Mac Hollins or whoever's going to be that number three receiver, or Josh Jacobs and like a Kenyon Drake, or Josh Jacobs and a Zamir White or something. Like, I feel like that's the most talent we have on offense on the field,
mm-hmm.
is those 10 guys plus Foster Moreau.
I agree with that. I mean, it all depends on if Foster Moreau gets better at blocking, because, I mean, mm-hmm. Josh Downs is going to want to run the ball. And
you think so?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so?
I do.
What do you think the ratio, pass to run ratio?
I think it's going to be a lot closer to 50-50 than it has been in any of John Gruden's.
I think we're airing it out with the investments we've made on in Devontae Adams, Waller, Renfro. I think it's like 70-30. I think we're going to air it out. I think we're going to be the Rams. Especially with our line being the biggest question mark on offense.
Okay.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Is there anybody on the left side of this lineup, all the starters we mentioned, does a single one of them play Thursday night? Single starter, do they play in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think Cotton and Leatherwood are going to play quite a bit. Yeah.
Even though they have the potential to be starters.
Yeah, because we need to know, you know, those are the biggest question marks, I think. Biggest question marks out there. I think, those are the two that if you're going to look at, I mean, if we're just picking that row, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of Lester Cotton and Alex Leatherwood.
Okay. Special teams. The only like interesting thing to me was Hunter Renfro, punt returner, which I love. I love that. I know Rory was upset because he's like, hey, why are we going to risk Hunter Renfro getting injured on punt returns? Where it's like, you risk every player getting injured on every play.
Every single play, yeah.
I remember I bought a pair of rollerblades when I was in fourth grade, and I was so worried about getting them dirty and wearing them out that I barely used them, and then I grew out of them. It's like, what's the point of having them if you're not going to use them? Like, you're not going to throw them in relentless injury prone situations, but you got them. Use them. Right? Like if having Hunter Renfro return punts for you means A, if they do a fake punt, you've got basically a free safety back there to stop the fake punt.
Right.
And two, you can get an extra 5 yards per return. Like, you roll that dice. It's not like he's injury prone.
Yeah, and ultimately, even though he did have a very good second half of the season last year, he's not the focus of your offense. He's not even your second biggest target.
Yeah,
he's your third receiving target. So it's not like, I mean, he was
not a like he had bowler. To be the number really one well. Receiver like he did towards the end of the season last season.
Right? Yeah,
like he's gonna be the number three or four target. Like you should have pretty semi fresh legs.
Yeah, for sure. And so I really do think that we're seeing kind of a, you know, we're the little hints that are being dropped. That and that one of that's one of them. If he was gonna have. I feel if he was going to have a much bigger role in the offense than maybe we anticipated, maybe he wouldn't be returning punts, but it's going to be the Devontae and Waller show.
They have seven running backs listed right here. Josh Jacobs, Brennan Bolden, Amir Abdullah, Britton Brown, Kenyon Drake, Zamir White, Austin Walter. How many of them do you think they keep?
Probably four or five,
right? Yeah. Five would be a lot. Four, I think. With Josh
McDaniels. Four is industry standard. Five is Josh McDaniels standard. Yeah. Because look, the that fifth guy is either going to be a backup linebacker or a backup running back. Because they're not going to play anyway. They're going to be a special teams player. So that swing guy is going to be either because they're going to be around the same size. Linebacker, running back, usually around the same size.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a special teams guy. Whoever plays the best special teams probably is going to be that guy.
Jacobs, I think, is the clear starter. I think the first and second down back, generally, most of the time. Zamir White, I feel like they drafted him too high and too kind of well-rounded to have him not be in deep rotation. Brandon Bolden is the wild card to me because he's a Josh McDaniels guy, knows the system. I feel like he'll carve out a role. And I can't believe I didn't realize this until now, but like Kenyon Drake, you think they're going to try to move on from him? I know he's got a contract that's going to be hard to do that, but like he's the one I'm not sure what the role is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I pointed out at being a little bit surprising that he's on the third string. But I mean, ultimately, you have to perform when you're on the field. And if let's say he's in and out because of his ankle still not 100% or whatever. He needs to show out, man, because ultimately McDaniels knows what Brandon Bolden can do, and he knows that he can get good production out of Brandon Bolden.
Yeah.
So Kenyon Drake has to pretty much wow him, because what you are getting maybe athletically and big play wise with Kenyon Drake is there is also comes with that an unknown of reliability, because you know for a fact that Brandon Bolden is reliable and is going to be able to run your offense. If you're Josh McDaniels, you don't know, you know that maybe Drake is a little bit more explosive, but you don't know if he's as reliable.
I fucking love our pass catchers. Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller, Foster Moreau, Matt Collins, Kenyon Drake, Brandon Bolden. And honestly, like Tyron Johnson, not bad. Like,
dude, Tyron Johnson is the kind of guy you're going to get five wide and he's going to take a little bubble screen and you're going to be like, where the fuck did that guy come from?
Yeah. Like, he's the guy where no defensive coordinator is even going to think about or scheme around. You're like, all right, we got three plays. Every single game for him, because there's no way you're wasting any energy thinking about Tyron Johnson when you have to worry about Devontae Adams, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfrow, Josh Jacobs. Like if you're scheming around, that's a win for your offense. If the opposing defensive coordinator spends 45 seconds thinking about Tyron Johnson.
Yeah. There was a play. We had this football player guy. He was a receiver, if you can call him that. Nice kid, really small. And we had a special play just for him, and we called it Antoine. I don't know why we called it that. His name wasn't Antoine. But basically, all the linemen got in pass protection and just kind of stood up straight. And he snuck down and ran behind the line and the tight end, and he kind of just leaked out. And the defense never saw him. And he caught, I think, he dropped the pass, but we ran that play probably 5 or 6 times that season. And he caught 5 or 6 balls. Like he only gained about 5-6 yards of catch, but he wasn't as fast as Tyron Johnson is. But it's what if you have a guy that can do one thing really well, like you said, and they're not gonna game plan for him. If you just find a different, and this is the whole Andy Reid thing. Yeah. This guy can do this really well. Let me put him in position to do that, because they're going to look at Tyreek Hill and the tight end that will remain nameless. They're going to focus on that. They're not going to focus on this, even if he's on the field. So, we'll see what Josh McDaniels can cook up, because it looks promising.
Any more on the offense?
No.
Special teams? Right. You know special teams. AJ Cole, yeah. Daniel Carlson crushing it, as they always do. Defense. They listed it as a 4-3, for whatever's that worth. Chandler Jones, Andrew Billings, Bilal Nichols, Max Crosby, 4-3. Linebackers, Divine Diablo, Denzel Perryman, Jayon Brown. And then cornerbacks currently listed as outside cornerbacks, Nate Hobbs, Rock Ya-Sin, and then safeties, Trevon Merrick and Jonathan Abram. Any surprises there? First reaction.
My first reaction is the starting, because Bilal Nichols, even though he's on the pup list as a starter, makes me feel like it's going to be a 3-4 or some combination of.
We always kind of thought that, right? Like, yeah. I feel like this lineup is just McDaniels like pretending like he's throwing a curveball at the other 31 teams.
Yeah.
We all know 3-4 is going to be the base.
Right. One of my main concerns right now is Malcolm Kuntz is behind Cleveland Farrell. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot of good things about Jerry Green in camp, that he's a guy to watch in the preseason games.
You're in a great position if you're backing up Max Crosby, because you're not going to have to play that often. No one's expecting anything from you. And if you can deliver a little bit when Max is taking short breaks, you carve out a nice niche for yourself.
Well, yeah. If everyone, okay, let's Max is out. Well, let's all focus on Chandler Jones, and you're Jerry Green, and you kind of ball out for those, you know, 10 or so plays that you're there. That's the kind of the niche that Kuntz kind of carved out at the end of the year last year. Mm-hmm. But I love the linebacker. I love our linebackers, man. Diablo, Perriman, Brown, and then you have Micah Kizer, Kenny Young, dude. These are like, We talked a little bit in the beginning of free agency how linebacker was maybe a little bit of a rough spot, because we cut a couple of linebackers that weren't doing dog shit for us, but we replaced them with some dogs, dude. We got some players.
Cheap dogs.
Linebacker. Yes. Yeah. Kenny Young, I think, is going to be a sneaky pickup. Micah Kizer, that kid, you know, he's not a kid anymore, but man, he can play. I mean, we got some guys that can play.
Nate Hobbs listed as outside corner, a little bit of a Trojan horse. He's from what we've seen in practice, he's rotated a little bit outside, right? But he's mostly a slot corner. I can see him, because he's got the physicality to be a guy that maybe follows like a tight end or something, like follows like the Chiefs tight end that will remain nameless or something like that. But generally a slot corner, like a guy that can be able, like can still tackle at the line of scrimmage, but still cover a pretty athletic tight end or running back, something like that.
You know what? The battle you have to look at here is going to be at strong safety. It's Jonathan Abram and Duron Harmon. Mm-hmm. Easily, even if Abram plays better, if Duron Harmon bounces back from an awful last season to become his normal self, I think he can still beat him out. I think Tyree Gillespie, third string, is a little bit rough, because I don't think Daron Harmon, there is no free safety, strong safety in this scheme. Let's just get that out there. Okay. There's just two safeties, sometimes even three. So I'm expecting, if you want,
I've always been higher on Abram than you because I like how much how well he does in the box, how good of a tackler he is, and how well he's improved. Even though we can both agree he's such a liability in coverage.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's enough meat on the bone where it's worth scheming him around correctly. Like when we play the Titans, I think we'll see a lot more Jonathan Abram, right? A run heavy team. We play the Steelers. Probably going to be a run heavy team. Like Jonathan Abram's going to be in there a lot more. We play the Chiefs. We play the Chargers, teams that don't run. Then we're going to see more team.
Chargers, the Cardinals, like all these teams that like to throw the ball.
Most teams throw the ball, right?
Dude, he's a liability, man. And again, like I said before, Andy Reid figured out how to just basically nullify that keep Abram in the box thinking.
Yeah.
Is just figure out who he's covering and send them deep. And throw him the ball regardless if he's covered or not, because he can't track the ball in the air. One kid that I want to take put a little focus on out of Iowa, Zach Van Valkenburg.
Sweet
fucking name, number one. He is a Max Crosby light, a little bit smaller because he played linebacker in college.
That's a name that looks awesome on a jersey.
Oh, dude, all he's just fucking got to be curved around and shit. Yep. Or the van is really small and the Valkenburg is right there.
Or you just do a little emoji of a van and then Valkenburg.
Wow. I don't know about that one. I don't know if I can co-sign with that. But no, tackling machine at Iowa, big motor, not overly superly athletic, which is why he's a Max Crosby light. I think Max Crosby is more athletic. Mm-hmm. But if he's able to scratch and claw his way on the team or develop on the practice squad, that kid I think could be something in if not this year, in a year or two. Also, Isaiah Polamalu, I watched every single one of his college games at USC, and I think he is not quite as good against the run as Jonathan Abram, but he is much better against the pass at Jonathan Abram. Plus, he's 6'4", and moves like a safety. He's huge, but moves like a safety. That's another one out there.
Anyone on the left side of the screen, any starters listed you see playing on Thursday night?
Abram.
Yeah. Even though he's injury prone and this is his fourth season.
Hey man, look, you have to show that we need to see that you've improved in the god awful area that you've shown us that you have in your game. Mm-hmm. You need to show us that you've improved and you've filled the gap. You fill that hole that you have in your game. And the more tape, if I'm Jonathan Abram, the more tape, the better. Because ultimately, I don't think it's going to be in practice. Because I think he's going to get kind of outshined in practice when it comes to, especially in coverage.
He looks better when it's 100%. Like yes. When you're doing like 7-on-7s with no shoulder pads, he gets embarrassed.
Yeah, he gets embarrassed.
He looks best when he can lay a hit on people.
Dude. Blow people up, go out there. If I was him, I'd do play me three quarters. Let me show you what I can do when I'm playing.
A potential starter, three quarters. You're wearing the ticket injury risk.
Because look, dude, who cares if he gets hurt?
He's listed as a starter. Like you should care. Okay.
He's listed as a starter, but should he be starting? You cannot be a safety that poor against the pass. In this type of scheme,
he's not some undrafted rookie that you're just like throw him into the meat grinder. You don't care. Like I'm with you. Like he's not, you know, written in stone as a starter, but he's not so like you can't just like throw him to the wolves because you don't care. He's not a meat grinder player.
He's expendable.
Too much. He's too experienced.
He's expendable.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
In this scheme, he's expendable.
At worst, he's the second string safety. Which you don't want to be expendable. That's what fourth string safeties are for. Undrafted free agents are for.
Sure. I think we just have a little bit of a difference.
It bears repeating, our defense has the sweetest names in football. Max Crosby, Divine Diablo, Rock Yacine, Zach Van Valkenburg, Vernon Butler, Trevon Mullen, Cravon LeBlanc. We have more apostrophes in the King James Bible. Awesome.
Myron Tagovailoa Amosa.
Quinterio Cole.
Quinterio. Matthias Farley. That's a freaking sweet name.
Myron Tagovailoa Emosa. Malcolm Kuntz.
Isaiah Polamau.
Tyler from House Lannister. It's actually Lancaster, but I threw in Lannister.
Trayvon. We got a Trayvon Mary. We got a Rock. We got a Rock. A Rock and a Rod and a Teamer.
Roderick Teamer? Roderick.
We have a Denzel.
Dude, if you had a daughter and he brings home a boyfriend, his name's Roderick, you're like,
drop a
I respect this guy, but I got to keep an eye on him.
Oh, damn.
Keep that door cracked.
Keep that door cracked.
So like I said, I finally got to do the show after 3 weeks of not being able to do it. And you and Rory took over for me. And so because I wasn't there, I didn't have the opportunity, dare I say the responsibility, to cap your guys' Derek Carr hate.
But you do.
And this is why. I obviously did listen. And here's just a tiny little, here's only 51 seconds.
Jesus.
Of you and Rory. Being wrong about Carr, and two, being wrong about how I feel about Carr. Take a listen.
He does some serious gymnastics when it comes to Derek Carr shit.
So real quick, this is you talking about me, or you guys talking about
me. He does some serious gymnastics when it comes to Derek Carr shit. I'll say, like, if he's got an answer for everything, he's got a justification for everything. I think you and I both kind of come around on Carr after last season, like he proved himself for sure. In a lot of ways, obviously he wasn't perfect and we still
absolutely
fell short, but like he's come a long way. But earlier on, the arguments with RJ were just...
they were painful, man. Look, the thing is, Derek Carr showed who I thought he was a great leader, good guy to have as a face of your franchise. He can make a star out of a nobody. You know, Hunter Renfro. These are all points that I hit that RJ was freaking shitting on me all over. Like, oh, you didn't take this seriously. And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? All those fucking things came into fruition this year.
So first off, the Rory bullshit.
Rory went after you, bro.
He's always got an answer for everything. Yeah, that's called being right. It's like, hey, here's the reason I shit on Carr. I'm like, well, I have an answer why you're wrong. He always has an answer for everything about Derek Carr. Yeah, it's called doing my homework and being right about it. Like, oh, I'm arguing with this rocket scientist, and every time I argue with him, he's got this algorithm that proves what he's saying is correct. Yeah, it's called being right.
I don't know if that's
correct. It's called being right. Always having an answer for something is not being able to admit that I am wrong and you are right. That's Rory.
Well, like, let me address that. I don't know if that's necessarily a fair comparison to an actual, like, proven algorithm. But
you're right. I'm more right than rocket scientists are about rocket science when it comes to Derek Carr.
Thank you for clearing that up. But he also did mention the mental gymnastics.
Please tell me how I've altered
my thought
process.
This is Rory. I'm saying this is what Rory's
Yeah, but you wanted to defend Rory and back
I'm not defending Rory. I said, wait, you missed something. You missed. Rory did say you use mental gymnastics. So you saying I'm always right because I always have something to say doesn't excuse
away. What mental gymnastics have I used?
Ask Rory. Rory made the comment. Not
you wanted. You wanted to point to it. You wanted to say no. He said this.
I was just clearing it up. Because you said, oh, he said that I always have an answer, but you didn't address
without giving an example of always have an answer and without giving an example of mental gymnastics. That's just me being right and you not wanting to hear it. And by you, I mean Rory. That's what that means. If you can't give me an example, it's like RJ is wrong because of X, Y, and Z, or RJ said A, but the answer is B. If you can't do that and all you say is he's using mental gymnastics, that means you know you're wrong, but you don't want to admit it. That's what that means. Well, the other part with you, Soto, saying, I've only changed my opinion of Derek Carr because he's improved and he's gotten better and he's filled some of those holes that I've had problems with.
When did I say that?
That's what you just said in that clip.
Play it again, because I didn't say that.
I'm paraphrasing. That's what you said.
He does some serious gymnastics when it comes to Derek Carr shit. I'll say, like, if he's got an answer for everything, he's got a justification for everything. I think you and I both kind of come around on Carr after last season. Like, he proved himself for sure in a lot of ways. Obviously, he wasn't perfect, and we still absolutely fell short. But, like, he's come a long way. But earlier on, the arguments with RJ were just...
like, they were painful, man. Look, painful. The thing is, Derek Carr showed who I thought he was a great leader, good guy to have as a face of your franchise. He can make a star out of a nobody. You know, Hunter Renfro. These are all points that I hit that RJ was freaking shitting on me all over. Like, oh, you didn't take this seriously. And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? All those fucking things came into fruition this year.
I didn't Derek say Carr that. Showed who I thought he was. What did he show this year that he didn't show the last 2 years? He's been making stars out of nobodies the last couple of years. He's been a leader the last couple of years. Like, the examples you gave, he's been. He didn't all of a sudden do that this season.
In smaller snippets, he has shown the mental toughness to push through things and push through adversity. The last couple of years, the team started off great and took a dump at the end of the season.
There it is.
That did not happen. That did not happen this year. Now, we cannot. I'm not putting it all on his feet.
You are.
No, I'm not.
You absolutely are. You're trying to convince me you're not, but you are. The only thing that changed is this team won 10 games and went to the playoffs. That's why you think Derek Carr's better. And I'm not picking on you specifically, because that's the bulk of Raider Nation. They blame all the losses on Derek Carr, and they blame all the wins on Derek
stop
Carr.
Stop this because fucking the team went to the playoffs. Derek
you're
Carr.
Like, Derek Carr's okay now. I'm okay with Derek Carr because the team went to the playoffs. That's exactly my point with all the Derek Carr haters in Raider Nation.
That's not
because
what I'm
because the
saying.
Team doesn't
that's
succeed.
What you're inferring,
all the
I'm
blame
saying.
Goes on Derek Carr. You literally just said it.
What else did I say? I said that the team took a dump and he wasn't mentally tough to bring the team through.
Yeah, so it's his fault that the team fell off.
If you want to make this guy the franchise guy, he has more responsibility than the backup safety to pull teams through out of a
fuck. The teams fell off late, and you blame Derek Carr.
When something bad happens, it's all the team. When something good happens, it's all Derek Carr.
I didn't say that. You said
that. No, you didn't have to say that.
Because I didn't. Don't put words in my mouth.
I'm not putting anything in your mouth. Yes, you are.
No. You literally just said he did not pull this team out of falling apart late. You blamed
his leadership
for the team falling apart late.
He even said so himself. He said so himself. He needed to be more of a vocal leader. I'm not a rah-rah type of guy, because he did exactly what you do. You go from one extreme to the other, because he's not a rah-rah guy. Like, oh, well, he's not this get in your face, because you have to be a get in your face, yell in your face type of guy to be a more vocal leader. No, that's fucking bullshit. That's what you're saying to excuse the fact that he wasn't the leader that he needed to be both those seasons. That's
so
what you're
because. Fault.
I didn't say no. I'm saying that
saying.
He had a role in those two seasons not going well at the end of the year. He had a role, and being the leader of the team, you take the most responsibility. Now,
because this season they went to the playoffs and won 10 games.
If you would let me finish, I said his play, and I've said this to you before, his play on the field, no, definitely not, because his play got worse down the stretch. His leadership. Yes. There you go.
I rest my case.
How can I say it's his fault and he's better when he played worse down the stretch?
Like most other casual Raider fans in Raider Nation.
So now I'm a casual Raider fan. Sweet.
Exactly. I thought you treat Derek Carr the way that you treat Derek Carr like a casual Raider fan. The Raiders win.
Dude,
Derek Carr's
Derek
okay.
Carr
the Raiders
and
lose.
The
it's Derek
Uber that he went in on. How about that? Because you're making this guy out to be the end all be all of everything until something goes wrong.
You make him the end all. I don't make him the be all, but you do make him the end all.
You're saying that because you wanted to fit your narrative of, oh, you're picking on Derek Carr. I use something very specific. His leadership was not where it needed to be to make this slide stop the last 2 years. Now,
so I can it was see his fault season. That the Raiders slid the last two seasons.
You're asking me that. I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
That's what you just said.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say it was his fault.
Yes, you did. Okay. You said he did not prevent the slide.
Okay, everybody, what I'm saying now, and RJ's probably going to use this clip over and over again, is it is Derek Carr's fault. It's everything is his fault. Type it down right now. Put 44:30 of the freaking so you can play it over and over again to kind of fill your fucking need to like be right all the time about stupid shit. Because it's not true. I'm not saying that. He's the leader of this team. If the team falls apart 2 years in a row, you're not saying that he doesn't have the bulk of the responsibility.
Whose fault is it?
You're not telling me it's more than one person's fault, but I'm saying you're not saying that the leader of this football team does not carry the bulk of the responsibility for the team falling apart 2 years in a row. I'm not saying anything. Derek Carr can come and I will suck his dick. See, this is the problem. When you have nothing to say, you play stupid shit like that. And I'm not saying anything. Derek Carr can come and I will suck his dick. That sounds exactly how you sound right now.
You blamed the skid the last two seasons.
All right, so let's talk about something else because we're not going to talk about this anymore. Because you're trying to play this little game, this little media game, and you're telling me this over. So it's his fault. So say it. So it's his fault. So it's his fault.
That's what you're saying, but you're trying to act like you're not saying it.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, again, for the final fucking time before we move on.
Yeah.
If you're the leader of this team, you bear more responsibility than others. Now, notice I said more, meaning there's responsibility for more people than just one. But if you're the leader of this team and the team fell apart two seasons in a row, you bear more of that responsibility because it already happened to you once and then you let it happen again. Now, this team, granted, it was a shitty situation, but they banded together and it was not his play on the field that helped them win towards the end of the season. It was his leadership. And there you go.
So we've got some injuries at defensive tackle. Hankins and Nichols. Pretty big ones. We're already like, it's ironic being thin at defensive tackle because they're like the fattest dudes in the team. but we're a little thin at DT, right? With Hankins and Nichols on the physically unable to play list. We got some other injuries, which we'll get to in a little bit. Chandler's missed four straight practices. Kyler Fackrell, injured reserve. Micah Kizer on IR. But it's the defensive tackles that make me raise the eyebrow the most because which player in free agency has the biggest spotlight on him for the Raiders to pick up? Ndamukong Suh.
You've been practicing.
The hardest part about having Ndamukong Suh potentially be a Raider is I have to learn how to spell his name, let alone pronounce it, right?
Suh, S-U-A.
So with defensive tackles dropping like flies in Las Vegas, does Ndamukong Suh have this whole new leverage over the Raiders? Because we've been talking about how his agent's trying to make it sound like the Browns are in, the Browns are out, the Vikings are in, the Vikings are out, Raiders are in, the Raiders are out, right? Like he wants as many people involved in the bidding process as possible. Maybe he doesn't even really need to pretend like other teams are that into him. Maybe the Raiders just losing D tackles and nose guards so quickly is going to make them desperate enough to come knocking on the door of Ndamukong Suh. Because if Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler aren't calling Ndamukong Suh's agent right now, they're not doing their job. And you know that he's sitting by his phone saying, all right, boys, I can see that that training room pretty full of some 330-pound dudes that have jersey numbers that start with a 7 and 8.
No more room in that hot tub.
You're gonna need my homie. You're gonna need my boy from Nebraska to fill in.
Yeah, you know, I'm convinced there's been constant contact between Ndamukong Suh's people and the Raiders throughout this whole process.
I would hope so.
Even throughout this whole process.
I still think it's less than 50% chance we sign him, but there still should be constant contact with a player of that caliber and the need that we have.
My concern for signing Sue was we signed a lot of free agents and we used a lot of draft capital on that position specifically. Mm. Now that we see that two of those players are going to be out at least, not at least, they could come back at any time because it's a pup list, but got two guys out. Depending on the severity of those injuries and when they expect Bilal Powell and Jonathan Hankins to be back, and also how these young guys progress. I think that the Raiders are going to kind of stand firm on their offer until they get a little bit more clarity, maybe 1 or 2 weeks into the preseason, maybe three, because we got, four games mm-hmm. this year, until we really make a solid offer, because ultimately Ndamukong Suh can just jump in there and start playing. As long as he stays in shape. But we'll see what the young guys look like and if they turn out to be world beaters at least good, not just more than serviceable and decent, but guys that can actually get some snaps. I think it's a little bit less likely that we get Sue.
We haven't heard any recent leaks in the last week or two Sue, which is a sign that tells me a couple things. It tells me, like, as you pointed it out well, like maybe these young guys can fill in that role fine.
Gotta give them a chance though. Gotta have to give them a chance first,
right? Yeah, let them give it a whirl. The Raiders aren't feeling desperate to fill that role,
no,
because Sue's available and they could get him for $7 million. I think easy. I think if they said, "Hey, we'll give you $7 million, 1 year deal," I think Sue would sign like that. So I think, and that's nothing crazy, right? We got $20 million in cap space free. Yeah. Like that's. If we were desperate, he'd be signed right now, right? So obviously Ziegler and company aren't feeling desperate. So I think it's a combination of everything that you said. The giving the young guys a shot, like they're confident enough to give them a shot to fill that role. They don't feel so desperate where they can get a guy semi-cheap, semi-quick and easy, like Ndamukong Suh. But it's now the question is, like, is that misguided faith? Because I kind of feel like they're looking at defensive tackle the way they're looking at offensive line. We got all these young guys that we feel like we can coach up and we'll be fine. These guys that played terrible last season. We feel like the momentum that they built, like they did play better as the season went on. They did play better, not good, but better in weeks, 14, 15, 16, 17. We can keep the momentum going. Again, I keep repeating my theory. Not that I'm saying it's the winning theory of Josh McDaniels, but I think the theory is we just keep a young crew that can stay healthy and let uniformity and them working together as a team be the strength as opposed to spending big money on good individuals. I think that's their theory based on how they're handling free agency. I feel like they're kind of doing the same thing at defensive tackle right now.
I think the theory going forward right now and moving forward is going to be, let's see how they handle a specific game plan. So they're going to put a specific game plan for week one, week two. Let's see how they can handle that because we know the veterans that are out there. We know what we're getting with those guys already. We can get them late in the preseason and have them jump in at the end. If there's a train wreck at any position, we can always go out and get a guy that can just slide right in because we know what we're getting with these guys. Like just for example, using, defensive tackle. They can wait until a week before the season starts to sign Ndamukong Suh because, it's Ndamukong Suh. He can go, what you're getting with him. Slide him in there. He knows the calls. Good to go. As far as the young guys, you need to get them some run. Let's make sure and see what they can do. See how they can handle this play, a different game plan every single week. That's not just, a different plan to a specific team, but like the entire defense probably is going to be a little bit different. And that's what they're doing with the offensive line as well. They're saying, okay, let's actually see these guys play. Let's see them handle it against another team so we can make an evaluation that way. Because, if we have to get a guy off of, the scrap heap somewhere in free agency, we'll know what we're getting with the guy. And he's going to be serviceable.
I also feel like, Ziegler has his ear to the road and realized no one's knocking down the door for Sue. Like we can wait.
Yeah, we got time.
We can wait. You ready to do some What Up Winbacks?
Oh, you know it.
It's too early to say that Darisaw, you're talking about Christian Darisaw, is better than Leatherwood Soto. He's talking to you specifically, Soto. This is from Warrior Zach. To this point, after 1 year, yes, he's had a better start. I agree. I like Darisaw better out of the draft, too. But let's be fair, Leatherwood had shit coaching his first year. Let's see after year two and three where he is at his development. I assume this is from your chat that you had, because it's rare that there's some hot Christian Darisaw conversation going on.
Actually, it was with the Rory. I think it was a Rory one, yeah. Well, look, what we saw from Brandon Parker last year, specifically Brandon Parker late last year, was pretty eye-opening. He was much better towards the end of the season than he was in the beginning of the year, probably because he's getting first-team reps and finally got used to it. That's not
shit
coaching.
He was going from complete dog shit to slightly less dog shit.
No, he went from complete dog shit to like a slightly below average right tackle.
Cat shit.
No. He was his last few games. If we're going to use the same kind of narrative with John Simpson, you got to use the same narrative with Brandon Parker. He got better towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's not shit coaching, number one. Number two, Leatherwood did not receive shit coaching in college, and he didn't receive shit coaching in the NFL. If you want to say, I can definitely, number one, I can say whatever the fuck I want, number one. Number two, you can definitely say Darisaw is better than Leatherwood, because Darisaw played the same position the entire year. Mm. Leatherwood was ranked the worst in the league in two positions, right tackle and right guard. Okay, so don't come at me.
Has that ever happened in the history of the NFL? You're ranked the worst player in the NFL.
What kind of award would you
positions?
Get for that? What kind of award would you get for that?
The sacko from the league?
Like, no, but look, you get double two sacko? Sacks, double sacko, like touching sackos. Because look, ultimately, yes, you can. He even said it to yourself. Yeah, he's better. He just said right here, to this point after year one, yes, he's better. He's better. Prove me wrong. Mm-hmm. He was a better player in college. He was a better player. He was a better prospect coming out of college into the draft. He played better his first year. What else do you need? I don't get it.
It should be that simple, right? Like, best guy. It's not like Ziegler and McDaniels are tied to Leatherwood's draft spot. Like, their jobs aren't tied to it. They came in after.
Look, and again, I'll say it again because I don't want to feel like I'm crapping all over the guy. I want him to do well. He's already here. We already spent the money on him. We already got to pay him. He's guaranteed for another 2 years. Like, I want him to do well. I just haven't seen it, and I don't think I'm going to see it to the extent where people go, oh, he's better than this guy. He's better than that guy. Mm-hmm. It's a big jump to make.
Rosales, he commented on a video I cut of Devontae Adams listing every single wide receiver that was drafted ahead of him in the draft, and it took off. It's almost at 500,000 views. It's our most viewed video that we've ever done.
Calm down.
Yeah, right. Rosales says, badass class, but haven't seen this dude without a Hall of Fame quarterback. So I guess this year we'll see how good Devontae is.
Wow.
So I've said, so there's a few things, and I've addressed it before. One, this is going to be the first time in Devontae Adams' NFL career where he's had other guys on the offense that the defense has to worry about. Have to worry about one of the best pass catching tight ends in football and a top three slot wide receiver. And and then arguably the best wide receiver in football. And a Pro Bowl running back. And a three-time Pro Bowl quarterback. Like, this is the first time there's a wide offense with a lot of options that a defense has to worry about. Every defensive coordinator for the last 7 years, when they play Green Bay, it's like, just worry about Devontae Adams. It's all you got to worry about. Basically.
I'm not going to say that Devontae Adams made Aaron Rodgers who he is, because that's not true. What I am going to say is Devontae Adams made things a lot easier for Aaron Rodgers. Mm. You don't get as wide open as you get, because I'm not saying that, because Aaron Rodgers can fit those throws into a keyhole. He can. He's super accurate. He's got a great arm. One of the best arms we've seen in the NFL. But that doesn't say that Devontae Adams hadn't made guys look foolish at the goal line and been wide open in the end zone.
Yeah.
Look, I used this example last week with Rory. And it could be kind of funky because it's a video game. But the people at Madden, their job is to make these player ratings as realistic as possible. That's their job. And he's the best rated receiver in the NFL. It's not by accident. Now, does that mean he's the best? He is the best? No, it could be, but he's definitely one of the best if he's rated that high.
I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to miss Devontae Adams more than Devontae Adams misses Aaron Rodgers. And that's not me saying that Derek Carr is better than Aaron Rodgers. I'm saying that who the fuck is Aaron Rodgers throwing to? Now, Aaron Rodgers has a better defense. Aaron Rodgers is the better quarterback. But Devontae Adams was his receiver. Like, he was his passing game. Like, he's going to have to drag his wide receivers up to his level. Whereas here in Las Vegas, Devontae Adams is just like,
just gotta be yourself.
One of you, just be you. Just be you, dog. Like,
just do you, baby.
Just do you. Let Waller be him. Let Hunter be him, taking his Uber X's and like doing little sweet little spots in the slot. Like,
leave the man alone.
He's just in a got a great money. Place. Devontae just, Adams is in a great place. And also, I think, Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback than Derek Carr. However, there are elements to Carr's game that treat receivers better. Derek Carr is a more aggressive quarterback. Like, Aaron Rodgers is a very conservative passer. Like, he's so worried about being perfect. He's like Floyd Mayweather in boxing. Like, he wants to have the perfect fight. So Rodgers is going to throw a lot of balls away where I feel like I was watching tape on Devontae Adams last season, and there were so many plays where he was getting open or he had half a step on a DB.
He was car open.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to throw that one up.
He was car open. Rodgers is like, there's only a 72% chance of me completing this. I'm going to throw it away. Or I'm going to dump it off to a running back. Whereas Carr's just like, boom, I see numbers going, which is what a wide receiver wants. Like, not every offensive coordinator wants that, but the wide receiver wants that. The wide receiver wants you to be aggressive. The wide receiver, like, hey, I got a hole this big. Throw it. I'll catch it. Right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like Derek Carr.
How big is your hole, RJ?
Pound it right in there. I feel like Derek Carr is a better wide receiver quarterback than Aaron Rodgers is a wide receiver quarterback, even though Aaron Rodgers is clearly a far superior general quarterback.
You know, one thing that we haven't talked about when it comes to Devontae Adams is Derek Carr's propensity to lock onto a guy and feed him and feed him and feed him. If he likes you, if he's comfortable with you, Derek Carr will feed you the ball. Because look, remember when Waller wasn't getting a lot of targets for a couple games in a row, and then he just out of the blue gave him another 20 targets, and then he made it the point to say it in the press conference, hey, but did he get the ball? Did I get him the ball enough?
You got his targets, right?
Yeah. He made a conscious effort. Like, hey, if I wanted to, I could throw anybody the ball whenever I want to. Mm-hmm. That's what happened with Hunter Renfrow. That's what happened with Zay Jones. Nelson Agholor, the same thing. Freaking Seth Roberts. When he got comfortable with Seth Roberts towards the end of the season when freaking Crabtree had the dropsies, he was feeding Seth Roberts and Bryce, what the hell is his name? Bryce something or other.
Jordy Nelson was getting forced targets when he was on two dead legs.
The fuck did we ever give him that much money, dude? I could not believe that one. That's your boy, John Gruden. He's a white guy. I like these white guys.
Last one, Isaac Singleton. This is from the short that we did about Max Crosby saying if they kept Rich Bisaccia, it would have split the locker a little bit. Mm-hmm. They would have kept him on because he was the head coach.
That was interesting to hear.
Very interesting conversation that they had. Isaac Singleton says, Raiders fans and players not understanding they got rid of a good coach for an egomaniac. It was a bad decision. And if players can't play for a winning coach, it really explains the lack of culture there. What say you?
I think Isaac's missing the point here. I think that they got rid of the egomaniac.
Bisaccia?
John Gruden.
Okay.
That's the egomaniac they got rid of. I think what we're looking at as Mark Davis, looking at the ceiling of Rich Bisaccia, just having a point where, okay, what's the rallying point this year? Last year was a little bit easier to come in because, number one, you're not the disgraced ex-head coach. Mm-hmm. You're well-liked, and you have a lot of great leaders on this team already that you can kind of get that. They could come behind you 100%. He came into a good situation last year because it was already a good team. He already had good leadership. And, you know, who knows how good they would have been if John Gruden had stuck around the whole year. Who knows? But what I'm saying is there was definitely a perception of that there being a ceiling that was a much lower with Bisaccia moving forward without the whole rallying cry of, oh, no one believes in us because we lost our coach and all this turmoil. That's not here anymore. Now it's just you and the team.
Who was the Roman dictator that his job was to take over during wartime? And then he went right back to farming after?
I don't remember. I know who you're talking about, though.
There was a Roman dictator. And like the parable was, he was literally on his plow, and the government agents came to him. They're like, hey, we're in turmoil. We need you to take over the government, get us out of turmoil, and then go back. And that's what he did. He got off his plow, went out, won the war, brought order to the empire, and then went right back to where his plow was and went back to work, right? That was Rich Bisaccia. He was the players loved him, universally worshiped the ground he walked on because he was that kind of man. And he was the perfect guy to say, hey, there's fucking anarchy. Gruden's gone. Henry Ruggs, losing streak. Everything's going nuts. Hey, I will love you guys into the playoffs. I will bring this team together into the playoffs. I will bring light to the darkness that was the Raiders 2021-2022 season, right? Now, his ceiling, probably, and at this point, hopefully, not as high as Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels is the offensive guru. Ziegler's a lot of experience, right? Like, and I think that's how Mark Davis views it. And I will always, forever, love Rich Bisaccia for what he did last season. Like, he will forever, like, once a Raider, always a Raider. God bless you. I'm so happy you did what you did. You gave us hope. You gave us a glimmer. You showed this team that they can overcome anything. If you can go to the playoffs after what this team went through last season, you can go to the playoffs after anything. And Rich Bisaccia was a core part of that. But can he win us the Super Bowl? Does he have the X's and O's to go against Andy Reid? Vic Fangio?
How would Bisaccia work with Ziegler at GM? Maybe contradicting styles and points of view. Mm-hmm. Your Roman emperor, was that Lucius Quincinius Cincinnatus?
Roman emperor Lucius. Maybe.
Lucius Cincinnatus.
That might have been it.
Quincetius. Lucius Quincetius. We need a guy named Quincetius.
I don't think it was him.
He was a farmer.
No, because he died. He died as emperor. That's not who I was talking about.
Well, shit. That was a cool-ass name, the Quincetius.
Right? He died at age 38.
I knew a Quincephus. A Quincephus?
Quincephus sounds like what comes out of your ass.
No, it was a Quincephus. Home to a Quincephus.
All right. Well, that's it for us. I'm back, baby. I am back.
Back. Welcome back, son.
More videos coming out. More live videos coming out. You and Rory, as of right this second, will do a post-game show for the Hall of Fame game. You're probably listening to this today. So today, Thursday. And again, Hall of Fame game, preseason game, not drastic things to look at, but certainly things that bear following, which, you know, which guys in the bubble are getting playing time, which of the starters are second stringers. I still don't think they're going to play a lot of Jonathan Abram. You think they are. We'll see what they do tomorrow or tonight when you're listening. Enough stuff to kind of figure out. But yeah, more clips, more shorts, more live. It's starting to feel like football season.
More windbags, baby.
More windbags up in your grill. Till then, knock on wood if you're with me.